and welcome to the Environment and Conservation Show on UK Health Radio. I'm your host Yasmin, and today I'm going to delve into the underwater world. Before that, I want to start on a positive note. I know this time of year can feel a bit grey and dreary, especially if you live in the UK. And also, the environment is not in a great state right now, and we know the planet is suffering. But there is hope, and I hope to bring you some light in the show, as there were some milestones in 2021, because the truth is that people are waking up to the fact that things need to be done differently. And as you know, on this show, we often like to think about the solutions and focus on the positives as a way of moving forward, rather than just dwelling on things going wrong and everything being doom and gloom. So, first of all, here are some things that are going right in the world. By far, some of the biggest conservation news of 2021 was the pledge at the UN Climate Conference in Glasgow to end deforestation by 2030. The commitment includes a pledge to provide $12 billion in funding to help unleash the potential of forests and sustainable land use. However, the promise was met with widespread scepticism, not least because deforestation rates actually increased following a 2014 agreement with the same goal. However, 2021 did see a number of on-the-ground victories. For example, in October, the President of the Democratic Republic of Congo called for an audit of its vast forest concessions and suspension of all questionable contracts until the audit is done. The government of the Indonesian province of West Papua revoked permits for 12 palm oil contracts, covering more than 660,000 acres, which is three-fifths of which remains forested. Environmental and indigenous rights groups are urging the government to go further and recognise the rights of native peoples in those areas to manage the forest themselves. Three of the 12 contract holders continue to fight for the government's decision in court. And Ecuador's highest court has ruled that plans to mine for copper and gold in a protected cloud forest would harm its biodiversity and violate the rights of nature. The ruling means that mining concessions and environmental and water permits in the forest must be cancelled. And the Biden administration spent part of its first year restoring habitat protections that had been rolled back by Trump. The Biden administration restored protection to more than 3 million acres of old-growth forest in the Pacific Northwest, which is a critical habitat for the northern spotted owl. It also reserved an effort to weaken the migratory bird treaty that Trump set in motion in its last few days in office. And also, the court overturned a Trump administration decision to strip protections from 10 million acres, mostly in Nevada and Idaho, to allow mining in critical habitats. And Colombia pledged to protect 30% of its land by 2022, whilst Panama took major steps towards the same goal by tripling the size of its marine protected area. And Portugal established the largest fully protected marine reserve in Europe. In other news, population of giant pandas have recovered enough for China to remove the bears from the endangered species list. So populations of some of the world's most iconic species are showing some improvement as a result of protective measures. In July, China announced that it no longer considered the giant panda, the symbol of the World Wildlife Fund, to be endangered. Meanwhile, China announced the creation of the Giant Panda National Park, a system of new parks that will cover an area nearly the size of the United Kingdom. The parks are designed to protect native species such as the Northeast China tiger, Siberian leopard, and the Hainan black crested gibbon. And several species of tuna are no longer heading towards extinction, according to the International Union for Conservation of Nature. Two bluefin species, a yellowfin, and an albacore are no longer classified as critically endangered or have moved off leading international list of endangered species entirely. This is the result of decades of efforts to limit the impacts of commercial fishing. In Australia, 3,000 years after the Tasmanian devil was eliminated everywhere except its eponymous island, seven Tasmanian devils were born in a reserve in mainland Australia. And scientists hope that if these marsupials one day again become established on the mainland, they could play a vital role in controlling invasive species. And here in the UK, a government report concluded that lobsters, crabs, and octopuses are sentient beings that feel pain, and as a result should be granted protection under the country's draft Animal Welfare Sentient Bill. And it's almost mad to think about that in 2021, we finally recognise that animals such as lobsters, crabs, and octopuses feel pain as sentient beings in the same way as we do, if not probably more. I mean, think about how many tentacles an octopus has and how much sense they have. And I think this was something that really was highlighted in the documentary My Octopus Teacher, which I highly recommend anyone to watch who hasn't watched it yet. It's just a fascinating insight into a man's relationship with an octopus. And actually, we had his wife and a producer from the show, Swati Foster, on the show. So feel free to take a listen to that. She gives an amazing insight into the kelp forests of South Africa and what it's like kind of living and breathing that reality.
The thing is, as humans, again, we spend most of our time on land. So there is a terrestrial bias. So obviously we see everything on land as more important. Why more important? Because I live on land. So therefore, of course, it's more important. Mm-hmm. If as humans we live like fish under the water, we'd be, you know, water biased. And we'd be more concerned about everything that would be happening in the ocean than it would on land. What we need to understand while living on land is that the ocean is actually the gigantic sentience that's running our weather systems. It's the ocean that controls most of the climate. It's the ocean that produces over 70% of the world's oxygen. It's the ocean that's the biggest repository of species on the planet. It covers over 70% of this planet. It's this absolutely crucial, connected, gigantic part of who we are. You know, to live on land, to have land be the way that it is, we need the ocean. Mm-hmm. So, you know, to kind of separate the two is almost like doing the entire thing a disservice, because you can never do conservation in silos. You know, you can't say, I'm going to protect this, but I'm going to forget about that. It just won't work. And I think conservationists for a long time have totally, it's not like they were not paying attention to the ocean. The biggest challenge with the ocean also was, I guess, access. So for scientists to go out there and understand it in the way that they can, forests and species on land, is more difficult. You know, how deep do you go? Where do you go? It's such a vast part of this planet. You know, to find, it's only very recently that can we dive to the depths of the Challenger Deep. And it's only very recently can humans with scuba tanks and stuff really spend more time underwater. It's only very recently that a lot of technology, in a sense, has helped humans kind of really explore and look at what's happening in the oceans. But having said that, even in that, we know more about the surface of Mars and the moon than we know about the benthic layer or the deep ocean bed. We've mapped more of the surface of Mars and the moon than we have of our own, you know, the ocean bed. Of all the species in the ocean, only 10% have been described, which means 90% of the ocean species haven't even been described yet. And it's with that sliver of knowledge that we make all our decisions when it comes to the fishing industries and the whaling industries and all the things that we do to extract from the ocean, from that thin little bit of knowledge that we have. For example, with sharks, everybody knows of the great white shark. Everyone is terrified of the great white shark. Why? Because there was a movie called Jaws that came out and did an excellent job of telling a story that scared the bejesus out of people, right? So that one story just changed the way people looked at shark. That one story allowed for 200 million sharks to be slaughtered a year.
Radio. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
How good are vitamin C supplements? Usually only a small proportion of vitamin C actually reaches your cells and has a positive effect. Whereas the high absorption levels of Goldman Laboratories' liposomal vitamin C help maintain optimal vitamin C levels in your body and strengthen your immune system. Now get 10% off when you choose Goldman Laboratories' liposomal vitamin C capsules. Just quote 10 off at goldmanlaboratories.com.
Do you suffer from pain? B-Cure Laser, a home-use CE-approved medical device for the effective treatment of pain, is now available in the UK. The results of a double-blind trial has shown that BeCure Laser offers a significant reduction in pain compared to the placebo group. To get your special BeCure offer now, call free on 0808 501 5122 or Google Radio Pro London. BeCure Laser.
The station that makes you feel good.
They are part animal, part plant, and part rock. They are home to almost 25% of known marine species, known as rainforests of the sea. Coral reefs cover less than 1% of the ocean, but are home to at least 25% of known marine species. They have been around since the time of dinosaurs, and that's about 500 million years ago. Some of the corals we see today have taken as much as 50 million years to form, and this is one of the reasons we should worry when they die, because their population will not be recreated within a single human lifetime. And coral reefs are among the most biodiverse ecosystem on the planet. There are often more types of fish living in a 2-acre area coral reef than there are species of birds in all of North America. Recent studies suggest that the planet has lost approximately half of its coral reefs in the last 30 years. They occupy less than 0.1% of the world's ocean area and half of the area of France. And yet they provide a home for at least 25% all marine species, including fish, mollusks, worms, crustaceans. And they are commonly found in shallow depths in tropical waters, but deep water and cold water coral reefs exist on smaller scales in other areas. And yet coral reefs have declined by 50% since the 1950s. This is partly because they are sensitive to water conditions, and they are under threat from excess nutrients such as nitrogen and phosphorus, rising temperatures, oceanic acidification, overfishing. Because most coral reefs occur in shallow waters near the shore, they are particularly vulnerable to the effects of human activities, both through direct exploitation of reef resources and through indirect impacts from adjacent human activities on land and in coastal zones. Many of the human activities that degrade coral reefs are woven into the social, cultural, and economic fabric of regional coastal communities that rely on these coral reefs for their survival. Coral reefs face many threats from local sources, and this includes physical damage and destruction from coastal development. And this could mean dredging, quarrying, or destructive fishing practices and gear, boat anchors and grounding, and recreational misuse, such as diving and removing coral. Other threats to coral reefs are sedimentation from coastal development, urban stormwater runoff, forestry, and agriculture. Sedimentation has been identified as a primary stressor for the existence and recovery of coral species in their habitats. So the very same pesticides that destroy the health of the soil as well as the health of ourselves and other animals in the ecosystem also destroys coral reefs. The deposits and the runoffs from pesticides smother corals and interfere with their ability to feed and to grow and to reproduce. From agricultural and residential fertilizer, sewage discharge, as well as animal waste, all contribute to killing off coral reefs. And nutrients that are generally recognized as beneficial for marine ecosystems are not beneficial to coral. So coral reefs have adapted to low nutrient levels. So an excess of nutrients can lead to the growth of algae, which blocks the sun and consumes the oxygen that corals need for respiration. And this kind of imbalance affects the whole entire ecosystem. And then again, there are also toxic substances such as metals and organic chemicals, and again, pesticides, as well as other industrial discharges and sunscreen. I mean, how many people that I know who who will put sunscreen on before they go into the ocean is just crazy. I see this all the time. And what people don't realize is the stuff that they're putting on their skin will really impact the coral and the ocean life in general, because that stuff is not meant to be in the ocean. And they say that so much sunscreen gets put into the ocean every year that actually it's impacting coral as well as other animals in the sea. So that's something definitely to take note of before you smother yourself in sunscreen and jump into the ocean. And then obviously there is trash and microplastics and the improper disposal of stormwater runoff. So everyone knows that plastic and especially discarded fishing gear is some of the main reasons that the ocean and the reef systems are being killed. Degraded plastics and microplastics can also be consumed by coral, just as they can be consumed by sea turtles and fish, as well as other reef animals. And in the same way it affects sea creatures, it also blocks their digestive tracts and potentially kills them through toxicity. And when talking about the ocean, we cannot ignore overfishing. And this alters the food web structure that causes cascading effects, such as reducing the number of grazing fish that keeps coral clean of algal overgrowth. And some of the worst kind of fishing, which is blast fishing, which uses explosives to kill fish, and this can cause physical damage to coral as well. And as the atmospheric temperatures rise, so do seawater temperatures. And this warming causes coral to lose the microscopic algae that produces food that the corals need, placing stress on the corals. Without this, algae coral also loses their coloration, and this is also known as bleaching. And this is something that I noticed whilst scuba diving in Colombia. I was so disappointed. I was on the Caribbean side and I was just doing my first paddy open water advanced training, and most of the coral had been bleached. And it's just a really sad sight. It's like the skeletal structure is the only thing that remains. And in a way, you're kind of looking at a graveyard of coral. And of course, we can't forget that what we call ocean acidification refers to the change in ocean chemistry in response to the uptake of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. So the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is in equilibrium with that in the seawater. So when atmospheric concentrations increase, so do oceanic concentrations. Carbon dioxide entering seawater reacts with the carbonic acid, and this is what is causing acidity. Because each year, the ocean absorbs about 1/4 of the carbon dioxide emitted from the burning fossil fuels. So since the Industrial Revolution, ocean acidity has increased by 30%. A rate that is more than 10 times what has previously occurred for millions of years. And further ocean acidity levels are expected to increase by an additional 40% above present levels by the end of the century. And if this kind of acidification becomes severe, coral skeletons will actually dissolve, and this completely obliterates the chance of them ever recovering.
The station that makes you feel good.
Galar Light is the quantum energy emitted from the universe, from the sun and stars. Now, Tom Palladino, a humanitarian and Scalar Light researcher, has created the world's only Scalar Light healing system, a system that can bring long-distance healing and wellness to humans, pets, and plants via a photograph. Get your free 15-day trial now at scalarlight.com or click on the Scalar Light banner on the UK Health Radio website.
Shields like masks are top of mind right now, but did you know you have inner armor working constantly to protect you from pathogens? It keeps you healthy and thriving. It's your immune system. Ion Gut triggers the body's natural ability to support gut strength all year long, so your immune system can protect you when you need it the most. How are you treating your inner armor? Visit uk.ionbiome.com to learn more. Ion Gut. Protect what protects you.
the station that makes you feel good.
If we continue the way we're going, it's likely that 90% of coral reefs may disappear by 2050. However, researchers are scrambling to save the remaining reefs, and coral gardening has become a popular preservation method. Coral gardening is a method of growing coral polyps to help restore reefs around the globe. Sometimes called coral farming, this gardening method involves taking small coral fragments and growing them through asexual reproduction until they are mature. The two main types of gardening practices are ocean-based nurseries and land-based nurseries. Ocean-based nurseries take coral fragments and grow them underwater. They attach the pieces to steel structures and monitor them. The fragments may need to grow for 6 to 12 months to reach maturity in the nurseries. And once they're ready, the researchers can transfer the colonies of new polyps to existing damaged reefs, and so they continue to grow. And then there are land-based nurseries, which take coral fragments, and growing corals on land allows for faster processing such as microfragmenting. And since most corals grow about an inch a year, faster growing practices are important for the restoration of reefs. And land-based nurseries aren't exposed to the ocean's changing temperatures, predators and storms, and other accidents or problems that could interfere with the delicate new growth of fresh, young coral. And then once the corals are mature, they can be transferred to the reefs for underwater planting. One of the biggest benefits of coral gardening is the ability of researchers to influence the reefs and make them more resilient. Engineered reefs can be more diverse and resistant to problems like climate change or rising ocean temperatures. So researchers can deliberately select coral fragments from reefs that appear to withstand stress better.
In Fiji, biologists are working with fishermen to bring the fish back by replanting the reefs. This is a coral nursery. But with wild corals already struggling, where have these coral seedlings come from? The coral gardeners monitor the reef, looking for corals that need a helping hand. Despite all this real estate, many corals end up clustered together. Crowded out, they will eventually die. So the gardeners uproot them, creating more space for some and giving the uprooted ones a fresh start. Each coral head is broken down into a dozen or more fingers, and each of these is tied onto a concrete disc. As every gardener knows, vigorous growth requires sunlight, plenty of nutrients, and the right temperature. So the coral gardeners choose just the spot. Within 6 months, the corals are branching out. They're spaced out onto adjacent tables, and a year or two after planting, they're ready for harvesting. The coral heads are broken down once more. In the space of 2 years, a single finger of coral has multiplied into 50 or more. Some of these will be replanted on fresh discs, while others will be returned to the reef. If replicated, coral gardening could help restore reefs throughout the Pacific. But its biggest success may be in sowing the seeds of conservation in the local fishermen. Within days, these cuttings will have stuck themselves to the reef, while reefs that were replanted a year ago are already starting to bloom. In a few more years, this area should be awash with fish. So there's hope for coastal fisheries on which local people depend.
March 2018, I began restoring an area of coral reef in Nusa Penida, Bali. At Blue Corner Dive, we've been diving these reefs since 2011. And during that time, I've been doing reef health monitoring surveys in this area with my students and the Marine Park. Over the years, the healthy coral reefs of Nusa Penida began to show impacts and signs of degradation, with dead rubble patches forming. These rubble patches seem to be not recovering naturally, but rather expanding in size.
So a few years ago, I began putting together a restoration plan for some of these areas. With a team of Blue Corner Conservation and Dive Master students, I mapped out some of the rubble areas and prioritized which reefs were most in need of restoration. I took this video footage of Sentell Reef prior to starting the restoration project at the start of 2018. The reef by that time had become a barren desert of dead rubble, with old eroded coral skeletons creating a flat wasteland with no habitat for fish or marine invertebrates. Rubble tumbled in the currents and eroded neighboring areas of reef. Sentell Reef was not a place that anybody wanted to dive anymore. In March of 2018, I began installing the first frames in these rubble areas. With the help of my students and volunteers, I transplanted several species of coral upon these frames with the hope that the coral would grow above the rubble and begin to form habitat for marine organisms. More frames were added. We were slowly able to build more frames with financial help from some of Blue Corner's diving guests who generously donated frames, as well as workshops and a bit of private and personal funding. Our budget is still quite small, but we transplant as much coral as we can, any chance we get. In the last 3 years, we have put out over 300 frames and transplanted over 15,000 coral fragments out onto the reef from our coral nursery. The same area of reef that only 3 years ago was a barren rubble desert is now becoming covered with coral growth. As the transplanted coral has grown, many fish and other marine species have moved in. The area is teeming with life again. And if this area can continue to be protected, it will just keep improving. These transplanted corals will continue to grow and fill in the spaces between the frames. The idea of transplanting coral is to stimulate the reef to begin naturally recovering on its own. Once the habitat structure has formed, more corals can settle into the area and more fish are attracted to that area. With some help, then the ecosystem begins to recover. Although I've now done over 600 dives at Sentell Reef, it's become one of my favorite places to dive in the marine park, but of course I might be biased towards that.
Whilst coral reef gardening has been a way for divers to mobilize themselves in a way that tries to save these very fragile ecosystems, is it enough? Given the circumstances in which we're finding ourselves, where overfishing and pollution in waters, as well as climate change, have such an impact on coral, is it enough? And this is something Terry Hughes talks about in his TED Talk, which you can find full version on YouTube. It's called Yes, We Can Save the World's Coral Reefs. And according to Hughes, one of the biggest things we can do personally if we're not divers is reducing our fish consumption. And one of the biggest reasons we see ecosystems collapse within the oceans is because of the fishing industry. Taking out huge quantities of specific species of fish have a massive impact and knock-off effect on other species, and it impacts the whole entire ecosystem, and then eventually this will impact the coral. And an opinion that I've kind of read and heard a lot on the internet is that fishermen need to be told about what their fishing does to coral. And I have a slight issue with this because I believe that small local fishermen, although they absolutely need to be aware about their environment, and I'm sure that they are, but it's really the biggest and the kind of mass fishing industries and some of the world's largest corporations involved behind that are really destroying the reefs. And it's not these small local fishermen, although there are fishing practices that they can adopt in order to help protect the reefs themselves. And it is down to, according to Hughes, it's down to the governments and the people who put this kind of strategy in place in order for this not to happen. And the ocean is, if anyone has watched Seaspiracy, something that it kind of highlights is that the ocean is a massive place and it's hard to monitor what's going on there. It's kind of like a grey area. The Atlantic especially is so vast, it's hard to kind of really like examine what's going on there. And whether or not any laws are actually put in motion cannot truly be monitored.
So the Australian government's response to the worst bleaching we've ever seen on the Great Barrier Reef, in the northern third of the Great Barrier Reef, was to improve water quality in the southern two-thirds of the Great Barrier Reef. Clearly the elephant in the room is climate change, which is the actual cause of the bleaching. So we have now a window of opportunity to change the trajectory of global emissions and global warming. If we insist on business as usual with growth in emissions of greenhouse gases, then the future of coral reefs will be pretty bleak. It's really up to us, and it's up to governments all around the world. We've already seen extensive damage to the world's coral reefs with just 1 degree of global warming. 2 degrees will not be a safe place for the world's coral reefs. And anything beyond that, the further we go beyond that, the worse the scenario is for reefs. So there's no time to lose. We absolutely must deal with greenhouse gas emissions in order to protect these fantastic treasures. Thank you.
There are so many people from all walks of life that are doing what they can in order to help protect some of the last remaining ecosystems we have on this planet. Some of these people being writers, journalists, ecologists, conservationists, scientists, innovators, business people that know how to create sustainable solutions. And you might be one of these people. You might be someone that simply just does the best they can in their own lives, knowing that every tiny thing that you consume comes from this earth and therefore has some kind of knock-on effect on the environment, because we are out of balance with our ecosystem. And this is very clear with what we're seeing now. So if you want to help and you want to do something more, there are so many amazing organizations out there that are helping to protect some of the world's coral reefs. Sea Shepherd Conservation Society is a not-for-profit marine activist-based frontline to help protect the oceans from the fishing industry. They have taken direct action and helps to shed light, for example, on the whaling and fishing industries, and they have had a massive impact on conservation. There are other organizations, and one that I thought was really sweet is one called Coral Guardian, and they are a French NGO, but they act internationally, and they aim to protect coral reefs ecosystems by engaging in the local community and raising awareness by the general public. And this is a really sweet program where you can adopt a piece of coral and they will grow it for you and transplant it into the ocean. And I thought it was just really, really sweet way of engaging people from around the world. And I think they mainly do stuff in Indonesia, so I thought they looked really good. I like to look at the big and small NGOs when I'm looking for people to help out, and always do your research, because some of the I want to end by sharing part of a TED talk by Sylvia Earle, who is an old school marine biologist who over her time in researching the ocean has seen the dramatic ways in which it's changed.
With scientists around the world, I've been looking at the 99% of the ocean that is open to fishing and mining and drilling and dumping and whatever, to search out hope spots and try to find ways to give them and us a secure future, such as the Arctic. We have one chance right now to get it right. Or the Antarctic, where the continent is protected, but the surrounding ocean is being stripped of its krill, whales, and fish. Sargasso sees 3 million square miles of floating forest is being gathered up to feed cows. 97% of the land in the Galapagos Islands is protected, but the adjacent sea is being ravaged by fishing. It's true, too, in Argentina on the Patagonian shelf, now in serious trouble. The high seas where whales, tunas, and dolphins travel. The largest, least protected ecosystem on Earth, filled with luminous creatures living in dark waters that average 2 miles deep. They flash and sparkle and glow with their own living light. There's still places in the sea as pristine as I knew as a child. The next 10 years may be the most important in the next 10,000 years, the best chance our species will have to protect what remains of the natural systems that give us life. To cope with climate change, we need new ways to generate power. We need new ways, better ways, to cope with poverty, wars, and disease. We need many things to keep and maintain the world as a better place. But nothing else will matter if we fail to protect the ocean. Our fate and the ocean are one. We need to do for the ocean what Al Gore did for the skies above. A global plan of action with the World Conservation Union, the IUCN, is underway to protect biodiversity, to mitigate and recover from the impacts of climate change. On the high seas and in coastal areas, wherever we can identify critical places, new technologies are needed to map, photograph, and explore the 95% of the ocean that we have yet to see. The goal is to protect biodiversity, provide stability and resilience. We need deep diving subs, new technologies to explore the ocean. We need maybe an expedition, a TED at sea, that could help figure out next steps. And so, I suppose you want to know what my wish is. I wish you would use all means at your disposal. Films, expeditions, the web, new submarines, a campaign to ignite public support for a global network of marine protected areas, hope spots, large enough to save and restore the ocean, the blue heart of the planet. How much? Some say 10%, some say 30%. You decide how much of your heart do you want to protect. Whatever it is, a fraction of 1% is not enough. My wish is a big wish, but if we can make it happen, it can truly change the world and help ensure the survival of what actually is, as it turns out, my favorite species. That would be us. For the children of today, for tomorrow's child, as never again, now is the time.
That was a prize-winning TED Talk by Sylvia Earle, who has dedicated her life to understanding and uncovering the secrets of a very hidden ocean world and what it would mean to protect it. Thank you everyone who has been here for the whole podcast and has been enjoying listening to today's episode of the Environment and Conservation Show on UK Health Radio. I'm your host Yasmin, and it's been a pleasure putting this show together, as I learn so much in doing it, and it makes me happy to know that there's things and projects and people out there that are doing some really amazing stuff. If you have a story or wish to share anything, please don't hesitate to get in touch through the UK Health Radio website. We're always open to new voices from whatever walk of life. If you have a project or something that you would like to share in regards to environmental conservation, we'd love to hear from you, so please do get in touch.
Nature gave me and taught me was, I guess, this idea or this absolute deep sense that I belong. I am the human animal. I'm phylum chordata, class mammalia, kingdom animalia. This is my world. This is my home. It doesn't matter that I'm a brown girl from India and I will travel tomorrow to the United States or to England or wherever. Sure, we have nation states and borders and passports that tell you where you can enter and where you can't, but that's human constructs. I belong on this planet. It doesn't matter. My skin color doesn't matter. My religion doesn't matter. My political beliefs don't matter. None of it matters. What nature tells you is you're a child of this planet and you belong, you know? So to me, that is the most powerful sort of message that I've always felt like when I'm in wild spaces. That's what makes wild spaces and wild animals so precious, is because that sense of belonging. Yeah.